The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
He is currently the head football coach of the University of Michigan Wolverines and a former player. His dad and brother are also former players and coaches, but there is more to them than just football. It's time to talk about attacking life each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast with Jim Harbaugh.
Welcome to another edition of Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. Coming up in a little bit, part two of our conversation with new Florida State head football coach and member of the Harbaugh family and coaching tree, Willie Taggart. We'll have another great Jack Talk for you coming up as well. We remind you, as always, to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. You can listen via the Podcast One app or on PodcastOne.com. And, Coach, last week we spent some time going back one of the old podcasts and talking about the presidential physical fitness test. But there's some other old podcasts. It's almost like some cleaning up some old business and talking about some follow-ups. And the first one is you and Matt came through and you guys got Rich Eisen his stadium-used flag that he can fly high above his house out in California. We saw pictures from Rich and from Susie Schuster, and that was really cool. You made Rich Eisen's birthday and then some.
Yeah, it was great to get the pictures. It, Susie might have exaggerated a little bit how high the pole was. that was not a, what'd she say in the original interview? That was like 60 feet high.
Yeah, I think
industrial grade.
Feet. Industrial
yeah.
grade, really thick.
Yeah, that was not what I was picturing, the way she was describing that.
Yeah, it was a little lower than as advertised. But the other one, Coach, that I want to talk about, the reaction of, and we talked to Jeff Phelps a couple weeks ago on the podcast, but the video you did that Suburban Drives Michigan, that you driving the Dodge Demon around Ann Arbor, including down on the field at the 50-yard line, the reaction has been absolutely terrific. Matt, what kind of feedback have you heard on the video?
Oh, just following it on Twitter and following Jeff and the Suburban Collection, and people just loved everything about it. It was just such a unique interview, seeing Coach in a different element, and then driving the car, the Demon, that amazing vehicle, down onto the field as we anticipated with replacing the turf counter. People loved it.
Coach, we got a tweet from Big Jim Sports, and he said, "What an absolutely fun watch. I am genuinely happy my wife is a Michigan fan, so I, even as a Notre Dame fan, can appreciate at Coach Jim for UM and at AED Podcast as much as I do. Jim and Jack Harbaugh are two people in sports I would absolutely love to meet." That is from a Notre Dame fan. He won't be rooting for you on September 1st. So, Jack, you're one of those too. That's pretty cool.
Oh, it's exciting. This whole thing is this journey that we've taken on here over the last, 48 shows. Being a part of this podcast has been exciting for us. And family members, I mean, we've gotten such good feedback. Of course, our number one guy is Riley Crane. He listens every week, critiques the show, has some great things to say. Joni and Tom Crane and the Harbaugh family, John. And it's just been great for all of us to connect in this unique way.
I hope that I live up to Riley's standards each and every week here on the podcast. I'm sure he is most critical of you.
No question.
But that's how it's supposed to be. Although, going back to a podcast from, like, my dad and I have talked about this a bunch recently, because how parents and the way they treat their kids versus grandparents and how they treat their grandkids. In theory, Riley needs to learn. You need to explain to Riley how you treated your kids and how much nicer you are to him as a grandkid, that maybe he can be less of a critic of you on that,
We're so much different with grandchildren. Grandchildren can't perceive you as any other way. You know, their parents sometimes can be very critical and very demanding, but they can't perceive grandparents being in that role at one time or another. I'm always reminded, back in Crestline, we used to have a family picnic. The Gottfrieds and the Harbaughs, we used to meet at Hamilton Park in the summer in July. And I can remember when we were little kids, 12, 13 years old, we were the kids running around playing ball, and the parents were hitting you fungos and having all kind of fun. The parents were cooking the meals, and they were orchestrating. And then the grandparents were sitting in chairs, and we'd all come over and pay tribute to the grandparents, and they would have this little smile on their face and appreciate the attention they got on that particular day. And then at some point in time, I can't remember exactly when it was, we moved into the parents' role, and our kids were running around having fun, and we were hitting the fungos and cooking the meals, and we enjoyed that part. And now, sadly, but joyfully we have taken on the role of the grandparents sitting in the little chairs with little stuff coming out the corner of our mouths, and the grandkids come over, hey, Papa, how are you? Oh, we're just fine. And I'm thinking, that's where my grandfather was back when this all started. I mean, we are at the end of the food chain, which is enjoyable and fun, and we can have all the great members of all three of those great moments.
We seem to have the cycle of life seems to come up on this show a fair amount. So I'm glad there's been a lot of great reaction on the interview with Jeff Phelps, the piece on Suburban Drives, Michigan. I know that we talked to Jeff after it released on the radio, and he has gotten amazing feedback from people. And he just thought it was really cool because, you know, with Coach being the guy that was the interviewee, you had Car and Driver pick it up because it's a really cool car. It was the Dodge Demon. It was a really cool car, and the donuts in the 50, that kind of stuff. Car and Driver picks that up. But then it gets picked up by all these college football outlets and, you know, Yahoo Sports and ESPN, whoever else, and everyone's picking up. So all of a sudden it's getting viewed all over the place. And it has to be one of the few videos, because everything that Coach does, somebody says something, right? There's always that smart ass out there that's going to have a comment on Twitter or somewhere. But this one, I'm sure there are a few of those, but there have been, like, the Notre Dame fan. It's been pretty universally well-received because I think everyone was just jealous. They'd want to be the one driving that car.
I got to see it in the parking lot when Coach went out. And when they drove off, I mean, it sounded like a jet was leaving our parking lot. I mean, the rumble of that thing, I mean, it was a beautiful car. I'm not a car guy in any stretch of the mind. But what I will say is that was a beautiful, beautiful car that I would love to have just for that jet sound. That was the coolest thing ever.
Coach, is that the most fun car you've ever been able to drive?
That was a great car. I've never driven a car that fast, but it was a lot of fun. Jeff was a great guy to hang out with, and his idea for the counter on how many times we said the turf was being played was hilarious.
I think something else in the video, the part of the reaction that I've heard from people that really stood out to them is that they were a little bit surprised, Coach, that you were dressed down at Blimpy Burger like everybody else gets dressed down at Blimpy Burger, that you didn't get, you know, like a Coach Harbaugh kind of special treatment.
Yeah, that was, I think it's part of the allure, part of the fun at Blimpy's, always has been, where you go in there and you gotta have your stuff together, or you get called out in front of the other customers. It's kind of like the soup kitchen at Seinfeld, Demos Donuts. How about Demos?
Demos, yeah. You got to be on your game at Demos, too.
Yeah, Demos, you got to have your order ready. So, and it's a heck of a good burger. So it's all worth it. It's all worth it once you eat the burger.
I don't think I've ever actually been in Demos. We've had people bring us donuts to the studio, either after Sam makes a great prediction, which has happened occasionally, or I get one at the end of the summer. People always, when I do my countdown through the summertime to get to the beginning of the football season, I always have a teacher that brings me donuts as like a thank you for counting down to, I don't know, I assume teachers hated the countdown because it means the start of the school year again. But so I've never I've eaten Demos donuts, but I've never been in.
Let's call Don Brown right now. Don Brown is the Demos expert. He eats Demos almost every day. He drives in to work on his way to work and picks up Demos for the defensive staff, and then the offensive staff can come by, and sometimes they'll bring some of the leftovers over for the offensive staff.
Well, how about John Falk and Jack Harbaugh? I don't think I've ever been privileged to that treatment.
You've never gotten one of Don's donuts?
I have not. I'm feeling deep depression at this moment.
As having an office two doors down from the fishbowl that Don Brown sits in, I definitely partake nearly daily.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the culture. It's part of the culture, the donut culture in the coach's office. You got to go to him, Dad. You got to go to him.
Oh, you have to go to the king. You have to.
You got to go to the donut buyer, the donut king, if you will. You got to kiss the ring.
Well, that's all. No, I'm not going there.
You got to ask for a donut. You know, that's donut protocol. You can't just.
Well, I'm glad I learned that because I felt that, you know, that he would be coming, not to me, but John Falk. I would think that John would certainly get that kind of treatment.
No, not just out of nowhere. You can't just, you know, expect him to send you a donut every day without going in every now and then, and, you know, or even maybe even chipping in for the donuts once in a while.
I know where Jack's going to be early on the days of fall camp now. He's going to be camped out outside Don Brown's office waiting for the donuts to arrive.
If he comes in real early, I think I might pass on that and try to catch him at 10 in the morning.
Just make it part of your walk into the building.
The other thing is a variety. Don's got good varieties. Just kind of like in his defenses, too, in his blitz package and his stunt package and the coverage package. I mean, there's a lot of good variety. Don takes the same philosophy into the donut box as well.
He gets the fritters every day as well. So there's a dozen donuts, not that I know from firsthand experience, but 12 gets the dozen donuts definitely there every day. And then there's a half dozen fritters also that come in a separate bag. So those are the daily donuts.
Yeah. And Jack, as Matt says, he's not first knowledge. Are you watching the nose grow? I'm just curious.
It's my stomach growing.
If you were on one of those, what do they call them, the lie detector machines? I mean, needle would have gone right off the charts.
There's a camaraderie thing with donuts, though. I mean, I know it gets joked about. Police officers sometimes they talk about the donuts and get the brunt of the joke or whatever. But there's a camaraderie there with the donut. You know, there's a morale factor there. Makes everybody feel good when a guy brings in donuts. I don't know. Have you guys noticed?
When that all started, Jim? Remember back. I'm talking way back now, 25, 30 years ago, pro scouts used to come in, and I was kind of the video guy for the scouts, so I had to set them up. And every morning, every scout from every team would bring in a box of donuts, and it started out with one guy. Then the other guy realized that he wasn't getting the kind of treatment that he thought he deserved, so he brought in a box. Pretty soon, you had 5, 10 dozen donuts to pass around among the staff, and that's the first time that donut thing that I ever remember that donut thing being that prevalent.
It's amazing. I mean, you can give all the same information to the pro scouts. You can give them the same exact access with donuts or without. But if you got donuts, I mean, they walk away saying that this was a great visit. You guys, we got everything that we needed. You guys really organized things well here at the University of Michigan. We really appreciate you. It's our favorite stop of anywhere that we go in colleges. They don't mention the donuts, but they talk about the video and the access to practice and the information that they're able to access. But with the donuts, the reviews, the feedback is outstanding. So
now you're saying that that we provide the donuts to the scouts?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I never got that 30 years ago. I mean, they would bring us the donuts.
Budgets changed a little bit.
We even got bagels and cream cheese and donuts.
Wow, we've come a long way.
There's a great quote out there, like, don't let your message get lost by your tone. Kind of reminds me of that with the donuts. I mean, no donuts, your message might get lost.
Hey, let me ask you this question now. If there's only one donut left,
take it.
Do you take the whole donut break it in half and save half for someone else?
No, take it.
If we're walking in together, I'll half a donut with you. I got no problem with that, but I'm not going to half and let it be. I don't know who cut that donut. Did they rip it with their hands? Did they use a knife? Did they bite it? I don't know. I'm not taking that half a donut.
Just remember, everyone in the building is the team. The team.
So I can add on this conversation a little bit, because Don brings in these fritters. There's a kind of the big cinnamon type of twisty roll to it, and that's a lot of donut. And I have cut it before and just eaten half because, I mean, you don't want to eat one of those whole things, right? I mean, you're kind of watching your weight a little bit. And then I have also taken the half that somebody else have before. So, I trust that whoever ate just a half cut it with a knife. So that's the only input I can give there with half donut.
My last on this, I worked here at Michigan for 7 years with one of the great coaches of all time, Bo Schembechler, one of the great staffs, Jerry Hamlin and the crew, as we've mentioned very often. In those 7 years, I do not remember any coach, head coach or assistant coach, that ever brought donuts to the office. And I feel at this moment somewhat cheated. And I feel like I haven't had a full experience here as an assistant football coach at the University of Michigan. Deep, deep depression right now.
Well, here's another donuts in football. I'll give you another donuts in football reference. When I played for the Chicago Bears as a rookie, rookies were responsible for bringing donuts in. I can't remember what day of the week it was. It might have been Friday that and it rotated. It started with the first rounder, then the second rounder, then the third rounder, then all the way through the draft picks. You had to know your week, and you had to bring in donuts for the whole team, and the guys, they would lay them out there right in front of the equipment room. There's another donuts in football.
I'm guessing those guys didn't take half donuts.
No, the fridge. The fridge did not subscribe to the half donuts. But you better make sure you brought your donuts in. If you missed, it was like, it better to not been born than to have not been in your turn.
So this is the opposite of the camaraderie part. The punishment is the opposite of camaraderie here.
Yeah.
This is going a different direction, but I see now.
Your equipment would have wound up in the shower.
Jim, you're speaking of equipment. Did you go through with the Bears? I see now where rookies have to carry shoulder pads and helmets of veteran players off the practice field during camp. Did you go? I think that's just insane. But that's just my. Did you guys have to do that?
They asked you to do it. I refused to do it. I would not carry somebody else's.
I'm with you.
Off of the field. And I even got in a little bit of a brawl with Dan Hampton. That was part of it. And Dennis McKinnon didn't like me very much for it. But I think in the end they respected it. Once I was on the practice field, I was there to win a job and not be somebody's carrier of their equipment. And then as a head coach, I've made that also policy that if you want to carry somebody's equipment, I see guys do it. You can do it, but you can also not. Hey, respectfully to the veteran, tell them, I respect you as a veteran player and an older player. Great respect for you as a player, but I'm not carrying your equipment. Carry your own damn equipment. That's also a rule that you don't have to carry the equipment. You can if you want, but recommend that you don't.
These days, news travels lightning fast, which is great if you're a sports fan. Between status updates, breaking news notifications, and Twitter feeds, you can always be up to the minute on every team and every game. While this is great for sports, it's the opposite when it comes to buying a car. Go online and you're bombarded with numbers, invoice, list price, dealer price. It's hard to know how to recognize a good price. Not anymore. Introducing True Price from True Car. It's the only price you need to know because it's exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories. How do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want, so you know how to recognize a good price. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
New to Podcast One Sportsnet, Baseball and Chill, and the Big 12 Podcast. Listen each week to Kelly Nash and Scott Braum as they cover all the big storylines and trending topics on and off the diamond on Baseball and Chill. Then jump over to the Big 12 Podcast and listen to Chuck Cooperstein each week to go over the best highlights and look ahead to the biggest events in the conference. Listen free exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOneSports.com, and the Podcast One app. Share it with a friend and leave a rating and review. This is Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast.
So, Will, I got to ask you, you've worked for Jack, you've worked for Jim. Can you talk about working for both of those guys, what it's like, similarities, differences?
It's funny because there's not many differences, I tell you.
I take that as a compliment.
I can remember sitting in meetings and at Stanford, I'm like, golly, that sounds just like Jack Harbaugh. You know, it was just like a spitting image of him. It was great. You know, it was going to be highly competitive. The environment was going to be highly competitive. I don't care what it was, whether it's football or whether it's walking through the hallway or playing a game of pickup ball. It was going to be competitive. But the discipline and I think what I took out of all of it is the love for the players, you know, and how they treat the players. And it make a ton of a difference when dealing with them. And I tell you what, that's really helped me along the way.
You know, you obviously raised by your dad, but you never actually played for him.
No, baseball, Sheriff's All-Stars. 2 years, he was the manager of the Ann Arbor Sheriff's All-Stars.
How was the hitting?
Well, we're bunters. Harbaugh's are bunters. We got to try to leg out singles.
What do they call that? Ball bunting and stealing and
yeah,
playing some small ball?
Small ball. We were
Billy
small.
Ball.
Very small.
Billy Martin.
Billy Martin ball.
So, Willie, you had the head job at Western Kentucky, then get the job at South Florida. Talk about the transition and how that process took place.
I know, like, for myself, I always wanted to be at the highest level. Once I started and became a head coach, it's like you want to work and get to the highest level. And, you know, we did a good job at Western and started to get some interviews from schools. And in South Florida at the time, they were in the Big East, and they had an opportunity to play for BCS bowl games. And all I can think of was the tons of players in the state of Florida. And I looked at some of the history of South Florida, and they had beaten Florida State. They had beaten some of these schools already. And it was like, man, we're on the same level. If I can get down there and I can compete with the best of them, you know, and recruiting some of the best players. And I was familiar, you know, they didn't have to retrain me in the community around there. So went there, I took the job, and again, it was another rebuild. And then about 3 months after I took the job, the Big East exploded. I'm like, you got to be kidding me right now. You know, it exploded, and then came the American Conference, you know. So still on that mission to get to the highest level of football, and knowing that we had to do a good job where we were in order for that to happen. And we turned it around and with some really good football players. And then there was another time where I had to make another decision on whether I leave or stay there. And then Oregon came, and they had played in a national championship game like the last, like twice in like 7 years. And so I knew there's a place where you can have a chance again to win a national championship. And so I went out there and took the leap of faith. I've never been to Oregon before, other than when we played them, it was at Stanford, mm-hmm. you know. And but they had all the resources and great people and had some recent history of success there. So took that job, and it was great. It was a great experience, really, really good experience.
Willie, some of your staff are former teammates mm-hmm. and friends of yours at Western Kentucky University. Tell mm-hmm. us a little bit about those guys that are working on your staff.
You say some of them are teammates, guys that understand me and what I believe in, and they bought into the vision, and they really helped at all these stops because they helped change the culture of what we're trying to do. And like Trey Hackett is a former player of mine. He works in the player development department for us. Julie Reed, she had been an assistant for me and moved up to assistant director of football operation and help. Raymond Woody is a guy from my hometown I knew growing up, and he had coached high school football. And I was really impressed with him when I go and recruit and just how he worked with his team. And I always told him, if I ever become a head coach, I'm gonna come get you.
Yeah.
And 5 years later, I was able to come get him, and he was nervous at first, but I say, he told you should have been ready. But he's been with me the entire time. He's done a great job for us. The same with Alonzo Hampton, who had been with me at Western. It's a guy I met when I was doing an internship with the Eagles, you know, and we kept in touch. But they're all people that understand me and believe in the vision and what we're doing, and they just help with the transition. They help even when new coaches come in, just to get them up to par of how we do things. And they've been a big part of my success.
And then you brought your former high school coach
yes.
on board. That was at South Florida?
Yes, sir. Joe Canan, who was
– Joe Canan.
Joe Canan was a big-time high school football coach there in South Florida. And our third year at South Florida, I hired him on our staff as a consultant, you know. And that was great just to hear from someone else. And I learned a long time ago, surround yourself with people who are smarter than you. and I did that. You know, and it really helped, you know, when having him around and help with our staff and with our players as well.
And then Dante, groomed him as a quarterback.
Yep.
He was a freshman when you were
a senior,
senior.
Yes, and he came in, and I can remember Dante coming in, and he was this big time quarterback from Louisville, Kentucky. I keep hearing about everyone telling me, all right, now, Willie, now you got some competition right here. Now let's go. So he got me fired up, and we come and we have practice. And I remember Dante being in there, he run the ball, and I hear my teammates like, yeah. Oh, I was ticked. I was like, coach, put me back in. You know, put me back in. And I remember saying, yeah, he can have this once I'm gone, but not while I'm here, that's for sure. And Dante had to play receiver that year. Did a good job for us.
What game was it? We played Louisville.
That was my senior year.
In the new stadium.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yep.
John L. Smith
yes.
was the coach there,
yep.
and Redmond was the quarterback.
Yep.
I think he had 800 yards passing that day against us, but we put about 40 on them
I
think in your first half, you rushed for over 200 yards,
yeah.
or close to 200 yards in the first half.
177.
In the first half, and then you get the ankle.
Sprained my ankle.
And then
yep.
Dante came in, and he rushed for about 160.
Yep, they couldn't stop us.
So speaking of Coach
Coach Woody, he was at Palmetto High School.
Yes.
Correct, right? Okay, he's coming back. So I went maybe a year after I recruited you, went there, and there was a quarterback there. We didn't get that quarterback right, but Mike Mills was there, right?
He was at Bayshore then.
Oh, Mike. Oh, that's right.
Well, he was at
Coach
Bayshore.
Woody was at Bayshore?
Yes, and that's what Mike Mills.
We got Mike Mills.
Yep.
I can't remember who the quarterback was that didn't come, but Mike Mills ended up being a heck of a good player.
Oh, yeah.
The other quick story I want to tell was we're talking about the internship that Willie did at the Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
And you just pretty much after you'd graduated from college, right? You'd been coaching for a while. You'd been coaching for a while, but and I was at the Raiders. Just got there. I was a quality control coach, really low in the totem pole, et cetera. But I invited Willie to come over to the combine in Indianapolis. So I got Willie a pass, and we sat with John at the combine, and I had to go to the bathroom. And Willie said he had to go to the bathroom, too. So we get up, and we walk up the stairs, down around. There was an open bathroom right down by the tunnel.
Yeah.
So we go into the bathroom. We both did our business or whatever. We're now at the sinks, and in walks Al Davis. So, I mean, I'm scared. Really scared. We're both just, oh, my gosh, we're trying to wash our hands. You know, not be in his way, you know. And because he always sat right down by the tunnel. So, for some reason, he was in there. So, he says hello and introduced him to Willie. And chatted just a little bit. And then we got out of there as fast as we could. And didn't think any, you know, didn't think much more about it other than, oh, my God. You know, we should, you know, do we use his bathroom? Should we not have been in there? You know, it's just like. And then about a month later, you know, Mr. Davis said, you know, at Willie Taggart, he was a great player over there at Western Kentucky. He's coaching now. You think he'd want to be a Raider? I think he'd love to be. Why don't you call him up, Jim, and see if he'll do the internship, would you? And I did.
Yes, sir.
So you made a big impression. That's a decent story, right?
Is that worthy of the podcast?
Definitely.
Pretty good impression,
too. When you tell a great story like that, you know there's another story jumps in your mind. So now, this next internship was with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Uh-oh.
John, right?
Oh, yeah.
tell them the first day with the Eagles as an intern with Andy Reid.
Well, again, I think I'm still a young guy and can still run around with the guys. And so I'm doing an internship there, and it was the first day of practice. Then we go out about 9, 10 o'clock in the morning. Grass still wet, a little dew on the grass, and was working with the receivers. And I was acting as if I was a defensive back, and we was running the post corner route. And they wanted me to bite on the post, to really set it up, bite on the post, and allow the receiver to get back out on the corner route. So, again, I'm there. I'm acting like I'm a pro. I'm, to be honest with you, I'm –
They may sign you right now.
Yeah, I'm trying to show coach, they got a little bit, tibby a little bit there. So I backpedal, and I'm running with him. So, and then he breaks out, and I'm standing myself, I'm in his way. I cannot hurt this NFL receiver now. And I didn't have any cleats on. Now, you got to imagine, I played quarterback, ran the option. A lot of hits, okay? A lot of hits. Never got a concussion before. So,
you guys don't know where
preview,
this is going.
Preview,
where this might be going.
So I try to stop so I don't get in his way, and I slip. And I was pretty high because I was reaching down and I didn't feel the ground at all. And all I did, I woke up. I was under the tent.
One of those, your feet come out, and you go right back in the back of your head.
I woke up, I'm under the tent, and I'm like, what am I doing under here? And then the doctor's like, you were out for a little bit there. I'm like, not on the first day.
That's awesome.
So I go out the next practice, and I remember John telling me usually Coach Reid doesn't talk to many guys while you're at practice. So I'm back here standing with Coach Reid, and we're talking. And he was like, but Will, he said, to be honest with you, at first I thought you were just embarrassed. You know, and you just stayed there for a little bit. And then I walked over and I heard you snoring. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. The first day, and then Don Martindale, he was working at the Raiders that day, and I guess it was on the way up on Pro Football Talk, an intern at the Eagles.
Tell him the three questions. The doctor asked you three things.
Yeah, he asked me three things. He's like, you can't go until you be able to tell me three things. So he said, I can't remember exactly what it was, but at the time I was like, okay, I can remember this. And so he left, and he came back about 5 minutes later. He was like, can you give me those three things I told you? Gosh. I'm done now, you know. I get a call from Wink.
Masterful stroke of genius that was, because John will say to this day that Andy's had interns come through there, but no one that he ever spent more time with
or
asked more about him or remembered him than Willie. So that
I say I got noticed that day. That day I got noticed. Guys remember my name and some of those same coaches.
What did Wink say?
Oh, he called me. He was like, Holmes, what are you trying to do? Make the team?
Was there video?
No, I'm glad it wasn't. And all the veterans weren't there yet, but Donovan McNabb, he was there, and he gave it to me a little bit. And I'm glad everyone wasn't there, but I'm like, not the first day.
That's the adage. There's no such thing as bad publicity. It worked.
Exactly. That's right.
But I came back quick. Healed a little differently. Came back quick.
You didn't have to sit out a week?
Nah,
you got your back?
Go through
the protocol?
No.
Nah.
Protocol's probably a little bit different.
Different now.
Let's jump back into your head coaching track, because you go to Oregon, and mm-hmm. at each stop you come in, you talked about rebuilds or continuing things. You probably don't go to Oregon thinking it's a short trip,
mm-hmm.
but you're from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State calls.
Mm-hmm.
That's a call you got to take.
Yes, and I did, and it was tough because I had only been at Oregon for 1 year, and we had things rolling, and there's a lot of excitement, and we had good players, built a relationship with our players, and built a relationship with our administration, Phil Knight. That was tough, you know. But I will say, just as a coach, and you think about places you would like to coach one day, Florida State's always been that school for me growing up. I was a Florida State fan living in Florida. And so when they called, it was like, uh-oh, here we go, you know. And I know leading up to that, we were playing the bowl game, and you started hearing the rumors out there about Willie Taggart can possibly go to Florida State, and I'm hearing rumors like everyone else, and I got to answer these questions to the media, and I couldn't give my answer because I hadn't heard from anybody, but you keep getting it, and it's like, geez, then you got to address the team, you know, and I addressed the team, and I'm always open and honest with our guys, and probably was too honest this time around, and but I told them that was a dream job of mine, so I'm always wanted, and I told them if Florida State did call me, I owe it to myself and my family to listen. That doesn't mean I need to take the job, but I need to listen. And I told those guys, I don't expect for any of them to like it, but I wanted them to respect what we're doing. And it went a while, you know, probably about 4 or 5 more days before I heard from them. And then interviewed, and things went well. And to be honest with you, it was one of these great father moments for me. My wife and I were sitting in our room just contemplating and talking about the pros and cons of whether to go to Florida State or stay at Oregon. And out of nowhere, my 16-year-old son, Willie Jr., he came in the room and he said, Dad, he said, I know you're struggling with this decision. And he said, you always told me to never let anyone get in the way of my dreams. You know, he's like, I know this is your dream job. You had me doing the tomahawk chop when I was 3 years old and all. And he was like, I don't think it's fair for me or anyone else to get in your way of accomplishing your dreams. He was like, now, don't get me wrong, Dad. I don't want to leave. You know, he had a girlfriend there. So he said, I don't want to leave. But he was like, I don't think me or anyone else should get in the way of you fulfilling your dreams. And I just stood up. I hugged him. I cried like, wow. You know, it was like, At that moment, it's like he was the father talking to the son, you know. And we never just had a deep conversation like that. And it was a great moment for me. It was one of those moments like, man, he listened to me, you know, because when you're talking to him sometimes, you think he's not paying you any mind, any attention. And he brought that to me, and it really helped clear some things up for me.
Very mature young man to, mm-hmm. To be able to do that at 16 years old. And I know for you guys, you know, because when this whole process, you're probably watching from afar, he reaches out to you guys and must be thrilled to hear that he has an opportunity to live his dream.
Without a doubt, you know, whenever the things at Western Kentucky, you start hearing the rumors about South Florida. And, okay, I wonder if Willie's going to call. I mean, it's not something like I don't call Willie. You know, if he wants to talk to me, you know, he'll call. And but I'm talking to Dad. Dad, hey, if you talk to Willie, if you talk to Willie. Well, as a matter of fact, you know, he called. Or and, you know, then Willie calls me. And same thing happened when he was at thinking about the Oregon job. And I don't know if we gave any good advice at all whatsoever. I mean, just more just listen. And, you know, the end, you know, at the end, you know, I know you make a great decision, Willie, and I know you handle it as well as it can be handled. But, I mean, I was always just excited. Yep. I mean, I was excited whenever – same thing when he was at Oregon. Yep. And the Florida State job opens up. I go, well, there's Willie Taggart on the phone. You know, he – yeah, and I don't know if we ever helped, but it always felt good to be included, yeah. You know. And with
I will say this: I never made a professional decision without consulting these two. You know, I always called and not necessarily listened for them to tell me what to do, but just like Jim just said, they just listen and they talk about the pros and cons and then you got to make the decision, but they're always there to listen, and they always say something really simple to make you know what, this is not that hard. I go, wow, you know, and that's always good for me. I care whether it's a game, a tough game, or you're going through something. I can call Jim, I can call Jack, and they'll just say something really simple. Like, you know what, this it's really not that bad. You know, he's got to go work, you know, so.
The story when the Oregon job, I remember, didn't you talk to your mom and – and she gave you some kind of advice. Like, she didn't want to tell you what to do, but...
Oh, that was actually... It was the Florida State job. You know, I was out at Oregon, and she was hearing the rumors, too. And so she called me, hey, baby, how you doing? yeah, how's the family? Everything's going well? Yeah. And I know you'll just make the right decision for you. You do it. You've always done that. You'll make the right decision. And then when I decided to go to Florida State and I talked to her, she's like, yes, I was hoping. I was hoping you'd come back home.
You know, Jack, we've talked a lot on this show. It's obviously a lot of this podcast is the father-son relationship, and we've had other fathers and sons, et cetera, that come on. But for you, you've talked about when your kid can exceed what you do. So your son becomes a head football coach at Stanford. He becomes a head football coach at the San Francisco 49ers. He's obviously the head football coach now here at Michigan. Everything that I've heard, whether it's our conversations or even from afar, it sounds like you have a son that's the head football coach at Michigan, and now you have a son who's the head football coach at Florida State.
No question about it. I mean, Willie is as much a part of our family as anyone. He is our family. We took a picture one time when Willie was at Western and we were struggling, and we did it. I can't remember who it was, but ESPN or Sports Illustrated or somebody did a story, and they wanted a picture, and their idea was to go up on top of the stadium, and Willie and I would have our arms on each other, smiling and looking over the campus, and that was going to be the picture in one of those magazines. And I said, Willie, this is not appropriate. I'll give you the picture. So I climbed up on Willie's back. did you have a uniform on? If
yep,
I remember,
yep.
He had his football uniform on, and I got up on his back, and we're looking over the campus, and I'm going like this, and the title of it was for me was Taggart Carries Western Program on His Back, and he literally did. He brought us out from the ashes, and that picture to me just speaks so yep. highly, and. Again, as a father, you know, John, Jim, Willie, and Joni, and all those other players that have been around us, when they're around you, our children are around you for 16, 17, 18, 19 years. Willie was around us for 5 years as a player and then 4 more years as a coach. When they see you as a coach and then they choose this is what they want to do, this is how they want to spend the rest of their life, they must have seen some good things. They must have seen certainly the things that weren't so good, things that were good, and chose to spend the rest of their life in that profession. That brings you such great joy. And then to see how, you know, Jackie and I, we didn't try to pontificate or how to do this or how to do this. We just tried to be a husband and a wife and tried to be a father and a mother and see that. And to see Willie's family. And to see Tanisha and the boys and Morgan and see them and how what their relationship is, Jim and John and Joni, with their families, you sit back and a smile comes on your face and you go, golly, the pride just oozes from every cell.
You know, one thing I was just interested in just sitting here is Willie mentioned me. Now, Dad has a son who's the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, has a son-in-law who's the head coach of Georgia basketball. And we were thinking about this, the conversation of calling up and asking for advice. I mean, I've done this with my dad, Jack, when I was deciding in high school where to go to college. You know, Dad, I hear all the do what's best for, you know, you're listening, you're telling me to do what's best for me. Just tell me where to go. You know, when I was going from the Raiders to USD, do you think I should do it or not? You know, from Stanford to the 49ers. Just tell me from coming to Michigan, what do you think I should do, Dad? Just tell me. You know, and I just think all the people that have called you and former players that you've had, Willie, myself, John, Tom, and all your former players and people you've worked with, I mean, that has a long list of people that call you and ask for professional advice. One of the most profound things he ever said, and it wasn't to me, I don't know if you want to say exactly who it was, but coach moving from one job to another, and he was a little upset of kind of that he was taking the job, but the people at the previous job weren't very happy with him. Tom Crean going from Marquette to Indiana. And Tom was upset a little bit about, you know, the people at Marquette weren't being very nice, maybe on the blogs and things like that. And your piece of advice to him, you gave it to him. Do you remember?
I do not.
Well, something like this. It's like the
oh,
when, go ahead. When you leave a job, somebody's not going to be happy. They're either going to fire you or you're leaving the job.
There's only two ways.
Right.
You
go
can
ahead.
Leave a,
take it away, Jack.
There's only two ways you can ever leave a job where 100% of the people are happy.
Right.
The way I left, we won the national championship, and I waved goodbye, and everyone was happy. The other way is
die. Right off into the sunset.
The other way is die. If you die on the job, everyone will be happy, no matter whether you're winning or losing or whatever. And I would prefer to do it my way. Yeah. Win the championship.
But yeah, and then kind of the way I remember is you're not going to be the head coach there anymore. Somebody's upset.
Yeah.
Either you're upset because they fired you, or they're upset
exactly
because you left. But the only way both parties can be completely happy is if you die.
Or
if you ride off into the sunset.
And a national
championship.
Not a conference championship.
No.
There's still people that think you should have won a national championship. It's got to be a national championship or you're laid out for rest.
Yeah.
Permanent rest. There's only two ways you can live.
Who could possibly come up with that? Do you understand the genius of that, Ira? Matt?
It's unbelievable.
I mean, the truth to that right there. Either you're mad at them because they fired you, or they're mad at you because you're leaving. And only if you win a national championship and retire or you die is everybody.
So
I think it's genius.
It's just another Jack golden nugget. I mean, it's just they come every day.
I look over my life, and the word genius and Jack Harbaugh has not been mentioned in one sentence. Maybe this may be the only time.
It's just your ability to make it so simple,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
And like Willie Jr. made it so simple for his dad. I mean, nobody should stand in your way of your dream. I mean, you make that understanding, that part very simple, that either you're going to be fired and you're going to be mad, or somebody's going to be mad at you for leaving.
Coach Taggart, one of the favorite things in this podcast of our listeners is Jack Talk. It's those little golden nuggets. Do you have one that just comes to mind when you hear that? I mean, we've talked about a couple already, whether it's with your family or with your team. Is there something that pops up like, I always use this and I know I got it from Coach Jack?
Coach always told me to be who I am. He said, Willie Taggart's plenty good enough. And that's always stuck with me, and say I wasn't changing.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
And he's never told me anything that was wrong, you know. So, and like Jim said, it's always simple, and it makes it so much easier for you. And I'm like Jim, like I think when I do call, I want him to tell me no, don't take it, or anything, you know, you have to do it, and then he just listens. He's like, man, it makes it so much easier for you.
That's awesome.
So you talk about simple. We're gonna wrap things up on the podcast because Willie was able to come into the building, and he is now on the quote board. And it is the shortest quote on the quote board. It's two words. Do something. I mean, it's pretty simple, but yet it's not that simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you want something, it's simple. you know. But I use it with our players. Everything we do, just, you know, we live in a society where you got to do something in order to get something, and our kids now, they all want something, you know. So whenever I get asked that question, coach, can I get this? Can I get that? Do something. You know, if you do something, I'll do it for you, you know. But if you don't, you won't get it, you know. So, just keeping it simple. We have a thing everywhere I've coached now as a head coach. You say we blame no one, we make no excuses, we do something. I told our guys my responsibility as the coach is to hold you accountable to doing what you say you were going to do and not let you just slide, you know, and not let you blame anyone for you not having success or make an excuse for having success. So, I live by that, whether it's even with my family. That do something, you can use it anything, not just football, but dealing with your family and all. You know, you got to do something to be a great husband or a great father. Got to do something.
Reminds me of another great Jack Harbaugh nugget. I'm going to go Jack Harbaugh nugget here. And this Sheriff's All-Stars. I can't remember who the kid on the team was, but Dad's coaching our team. And I think it was Williams, the left-handed pitcher. You called him by the wrong name, and you called him Tom or John or Kevin, one of those, and he said, that's not my name. My name's Kevin. And you said, I'll tell you what, do something really good, and I'll remember your name so well, I'll never forget. Or do something really bad, and I'll remember your name really well. But just going through life not doing anything, sometimes people are going to forget your name.
Pretty good.
That was awesome.
I kind of forgotten that one.
I would say the last thing. You talked about being a family and all, and it's funny because my wife, you got Jack, you got Jackie, you got John, you got Jim, you got Joni. She calls me Jason.
Need another J. Willie, it's been a lot of fun. The best of luck at Florida State.
Thank you.
Not
Thank
when
you.
You're playing Michigan, but the best of luck at Florida State.
Thank you.
And we'll catch up with you down the road.
Here's a message from our friends at Wells Fargo, a company with a storied past. And a big part of that past was built around building trust. Back in the day when the country headed west for gold, Wells Fargo was the bank trusted to bring it back east. But somewhere along the way, Wells Fargo lost their way. So now they're working hard to earn your trust again. They're making things right by ending product sales goals for branch bankers. They're refocusing on customer satisfaction, making it a top priority. They're working with more transparency and accountability and fixing problems proactively. It's a new day at Wells Fargo, but it's a lot like their first day. See what's new at wellsfargo.com/renew. Established 1852, reestablished 2018.
This is Jack Talk.
I want to listen. I want to be better. I want to be the best I can be.
Welcome to our team. That's the team. Right. The team.
Jack Talk.
As you get older, you get to be 78 years old. Here's what I find. Hair grows in places that it hadn't been before.
Welcome to hashtag Jack Talk.
Now time for another edition of everybody's favorite segment of the week, Jack Talk, here on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast. And what people may not know, Jack, is that there is a distinct connection between the great Harbaugh family and another very famous family in America, the Reagan family. And I know because I've been being to your house, I've seen some pictures. There was one that was over two-year period of time that every member of the Harbaugh family had a chance to visit the White House.
Exactly. Back in 1986, Jim had University of Michigan and going to the Rose Bowl to play Arizona State. He's in class with Mark Weinberg's sister. And Mark Weinberg was the undersecretary to Marlon Fitzwater in the White House. And she mentioned that her brother had invited Jim to come to Detroit to meet Ronald Reagan in preparation when they were preparing for the Rose Bowl. And Bo told Jim that he couldn't go playing football, getting ready for the Rose Bowl, and he could see the president some other time. So he denied him the opportunity to go. So in February of that year, he got a call from Mark again, and he invited him to come to the White House. And I was at University of Pittsburgh at the time, and I couldn't make it. So Jackie took her mother to the White House in Washington, met Jim. They went into the Oval Office, and they had a chance to meet Ronald Reagan. And in the discussion, Jackie, there was kind of a lull in the action, and Jackie thought that she would mention to him how good he looked. She said, I tell you, Mr. President, you look great. You look much better in person than she wanted to say on television, but she said the movies. The movies slipped out, to which her mother jumped in. I never did like him in the movies. Thought he did a good job as a president, but I just never liked him in the movies. So the president said, well, fine, I appreciate the fact you like me as a president. So the meeting ended, and Jim went, they went their way, and Mark Weinberg told us later that he turned to his chief of staff, and he said, I wonder what she didn't like about me in the movies. And then he went on to say, I wonder what movies she saw. Maybe she saw one of my lesser-known movies, but I just can't understand why she didn't like me in the movies. And he said she'd have been better off to say, I think you did a great job in the movies than you're doing as a president. He could have handled that a lot better than he could have handled the other one. So flash forward ahead, Mark Weinberg has just written a book. It's called Movie Night with the Reagans. It's kind of a memoir that he's written. It came out about 6 months ago, and it's about a 150-page book. And he gave us a heads up on it that there's 3 pages in the book about the meeting that Jackie, her mother, and Jim had in the Oval Office with the president.
Wow.
As it dealt with those movies. And Mark went on to say in the book, I mean, it's written in the book, that there's only been twice in the 8 years that he was president of the United States that anyone ever told him that they didn't like him in the movies. And in both cases, it really concerned him to think that they didn't like him. And one of them, and he didn't mention Jesse Sapiti in the book, but it mentions that it was Jim's grandmother that had made that statement. So Jesse Sapiti, God rest her soul, she lives somewhere knowing that her name has been very much mentioned in that book. And then later in the spring, Mark called, and I was at Pittsburgh, and he asked me what I was doing. I told him I was recruiting. It was in May, and I was coming to Washington that weekend to recruit. And he said, what are you doing Friday afternoon? And I said, well, be done about 1:30, 2 o'clock. He said, why don't you stop by the White House? Can you stop by the White House? Come to the little White House in the lawn there at the White House and give them your credential. They'll give you a credential. So they gave me the credential, and I'm walking across literally the lawn of the White House to go to the West Wing. So I come up to the West Wing, and a Marine comes out, snaps me a salute. And then Mark came out and took me through the West Wing, where they have the podium where they do the press conferences, and went and had lunch. And then we went into the meeting room where they all meet. They all have their name, Schultz, on the back of their George Schultz on the back
the
of their chairs.
Yeah.
So we're just sitting there, and he said to me, would you like to meet the boss? And I thought he was talking about Marlon Fitzwater. I said, I'd sure. And he took my credential off. He said, you won't need this. And so I'm following him thinking we're going to meet Marlon Fitzwater. Made a hard left out of that room. I'm looking. There's an open door. And as I look through the door, I see Ronald Reagan standing in the middle of the office. It's the Oval Office. So he leads me in. And I'm telling you, Matt, Mr. President, Coach Jack Harbaugh. It was like it was a drum roll. My heart was pounding, and all I could hear was click, 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 click. I couldn't see anything but him. I mean, I didn't look around the office. I might have seen his desk, and I might have seen a horse on a shelf next to where we were, but I can't remember anything about it except just his presence. And he says, Coach, what brings you to Washington? You can just imagine him. I go, well, Mr. President, I'm recruiting at the University of Pittsburgh, and I'm looking for some 6'5", 280-pound offensive lineman. Have you seen any around? He goes, no, no, but I know a 6'1", 185-pound right guard that's going to be available here in a couple months. I said, well, Mr. President, you come. You come to the University of Pittsburgh. We'll find a place for you on our football team. And the amazing thing about that meeting, he told me, he said, please tell your family how much I appreciate the note they sent. And I said, well, you'd think everybody would send a note. He says, you know, we visit with a lot of people here in the White House, and very few people take the time to send a note. And he said, I got the note, and I really appreciate it, and be sure to tell him that I said thanks. Now, I know we're running along here, but let me just finish this story. So now Jesse Sapiti, a couple months later, she's in Cleveland, Ohio. It's about 11 o'clock in the morning, and she gets a call from Mike Weinberg, and she said, Mrs. Sapiti, I'm here in Cleveland, Ohio. President Reagan is here. He's doing a campaign stop for George Bush, running for president of the United States, and he would love to have you come down and join him for lunch. He'll send you a car, pick you up at your house, bring you for lunch. And Jesse Sapiti says, no, I'm pretty busy. I won't be able to come. But if the president sometime has a chance and he would like to come by, I'm making up some spaghetti sauce, he could come by and we could have some spaghetti together. And so the conversation ended. And about 4 or 5 days later, she gets a letter from the White House, from Ronald Reagan. And the letter, "Dear Mrs. Sapiti, so sorry you weren't able to be at the lunch. We would have loved to have had you. And I've heard about that world-famous spaghetti sauce that you make. And here at the end of the year, I'm going to be free. And if I'm in Cleveland, I want to stop by and taste that spaghetti sauce." Ronald Reagan, President of the United States. And I thought to myself, we see Ronald Reagan, we hear all these fantastic things, but how many other lives were touched by Mark Weinberg and President Reagan, and so much for his character and for his reaching out to people of all walks of life and all stages of life. So, fantastic thing. Then the last thing I got to tell you, then he sent me, after I visited there, a picture. It's an 8x10 picture of him punting a ball. Ronald Reagan punting a ball. And I want you to know he's got great form. He's about a foot and a half off the ground and his legs extended up over, I don't know if it's photo opt or what, but I mean, it was great form and the ball was kicking. He's got his arms spread out, eagle form, watching the ball. And underneath it said, "Jack, if you're ever in need of good players, give me a call. The Gipper."
Wow.
Not Ronald Reagan, but not the Gipper. And Ira, you've been over to the house. You've seen that picture, haven't you?
It's really cool. Yeah, it's really,
really cool. Really cool stuff. But great, great moment in our lives to be associated with greatness.
It's always fun to have a great Jack Talk. And this one was a presidential Jack Talk here on the show. I want to thank you for that. We want to thank our guest from earlier in the show, Willie Taggart. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Listen via the Podcast One app or on PodcastOne.com. Contact us with hashtag Jack Talk, or you can also use at AED Podcast or at Ira in Ann Arbor. Follow us and favorite us on PodcastOne.com and the Podcast One app. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. Thanks to Podcast One, our sponsors, True Car and Wells Fargo. Have a great week and keep attacking each day with enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Thank you for listening to Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's podcast, here on Podcast One. Don't forget to subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts.